I just want to start with an apology, especially to my ANC colleagues who may not, in fact, be here, that in our study group discussions we may have sent conflicting signals as to whether we wanted to propose postponement of the meeting or not, because other matters that we intended to discuss at this meeting had not yet been finalized. But the presentation that the AG is going to give today was scheduled way ahead, and we didn't discuss that part in the study group meeting, so that would have necessitated us to go ahead with the meeting anyway. So some members may not be here because of the understanding that this meeting was intended to be postponed, so I just want to make that small apology. We will nonetheless go ahead with the meeting. I just want to make one or two remarks on a few matters. Firstly, that the agenda item here dealing with the appointment of dealing with the appointment of the AG, item number 4, just to report, and I don't know if the committee secretary would have circulated correspondence in this regard to you. You haven't. Yeah. All right. Let me say, ideally, we would have prepared a document pack around that, essentially consisting of maybe that's the only official document at this stage, which is the letter published in the ATC. The Auditor General has approached the Speaker, reminding him that his term or his tenure is coming to an end in November this year, and requesting that a process be initiated to facilitate the appointment of a new Auditor General. There has been some discussions between my office, the Speaker's office, the Deputy Speaker's office, and at this stage it is not yet clear whether the committee that will deal with the matter will be SCOAC itself as it's currently constituted, or whether an ad hoc committee will be appointed, which presumably would include a significant number of members on this committee. So I just want to give that kind of update to say there's still finalization of discussions in that regard. You realize that in the legislation it's not explicit which committee of parliament should deal with that specific issue. Let me also say that there are some discussions that are happening around introducing a full discussion on, amongst other things, the Kada Asma report, that at certain recommendations relating to Chapter 9, and possibly even Chapter 10 and other chapters in the Constitution relating to institutions supporting constitutional democracy. And our expectation is that we would be involved as SCOAC in any such discussions once they ensue in earnest, so that we are able to give input. Because the idea is that this may include reviewing the governance arrangements of this various Chapter 9, issues relating to their financing, governance, etc., etc. So I'm merely mentioning these things for me so that members are on the lookout for such development. And the other thing I think that should have possibly been tabled by the committee secretary, and maybe I'll request him to circulate correspondence in this regard as well, relates to the Remco issue, which has been pending for some time. I, upon receiving correspondence from the chair of Remco inquiring about progress in that regard, instructed the committee secretary to approach administratively the office in the presidency to establish what progress has been made in that regard. The feedback at the stage is that a decision has not yet been taken on the issue. And upon interaction with the speaker, he undertook to intervene and write on our behalf to the presidency on the issue to make follow-up so that hopefully the matter can be resolved, obviously, ideally, before the incumbent tenure of office lapses. But, I'm not tabling anything formally. I'm just keeping you abreast of informal and semi-formal interactions that I've been around some of these issues. Yes, AJ?
If I may comment on the Remco issue, I did get a message yesterday that the President has signed a document which also requires my signature. I have not yet seen the document. I'm going to see it when I get back to the office over the weekend. And but I've undertaken to our leadership office that I'll finalize that role that is expected of me by Monday. So the President has finalize the issue.
All right.
Relating to Remco, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's good news. On a positive note, unless colleagues want to clarify any other matters that I've alluded to, I would forthwith hand over to the AG to lead us on the main agenda item of the day, which is the results of the audit on the MSNA for 2011-2013. Over to you, AG. Let me just say the other housekeeping matters we'll deal with after the presentation, if time allows. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and honorable members, good morning. The highlights that we're going to be sharing with you have been discussed with almost all the stakeholders that have got to do with these results. By three provinces which we're still going to visit at the level of legislature, which is the Free State, Mpumalanga, I think those are the two that are remaining, which are still to be visited. All the other provinces have been taken through these results. The NCP has had a session as well where the members of the other provincial legislature were present. So even those that have not visited in their homestead have been part of the MCOP discussion, so they are not familiar with these results. It's just that we have not had a discussion with them in their own territory and for them to respond to their specific trends and commitments around these results. The other remaining stakeholder we still need to engage with is the Speaker's Forum, which is scheduled for sometime in June. And if my recollection goes well, that will be the last of the stakeholders that we will engage after having shared this with yourselves as well as going. This week we had an extensive discussion with Cabinet on these results as well. And yesterday, in fact, there was another session that happened in Johannesburg, in the Empire Palace, where Minister Baloyi was hosting about 160 municipalities that have had qualified audit results to respond on the way forward. In terms of these municipalities responding to a better and a different audit outcome. This is with a view also of finalizing the report that within COPTA is due to table in the next 3 or 4 weeks in, I think, in Parliament or to Cabinet about the details of the turnaround strategy for local government. So there's a lot that we have been able to gain in terms of the response to these results, having had discussions with the, many of the provinces in particular. What we are seeing as a general trend in these results is the fact that what we have spoken about last year as driving these audit outcomes has not necessarily, in fact, has not changed at all. Instead, some of the situations have gone even worse. But the subsequent discussions that we've had with the various leadership has given us an indication that a lot is happening, and also discussion with the staff from within office that are monitoring these results on a quarterly basis have given us an indication that a lot has happened since these results were finalized in December last year. And to that extent, the specific provinces where we said it would be important that we get a refreshed version of the data of the internal controls so that by the time we publish these results, which I intended to publish around mid-July, or sometime in July, at least we can talk about what has happened since the last conclusions were made as reflected in this report. So that's what we will be also factoring into these results going forward. Generally, the audit outcomes, as indicated in slide 3, they do indicate that the trend is going backwards. Because if you look at the 3-year trend, the number of municipalities that had unqualified reports is shrinking, whereas we're expecting this one to in fact be expanding, and in fact expanding towards the green shading, which is the unqualified reports with the findings. But the number of the municipalities with qualified reports is the one that is increasing. There could be a reason for this, and one of the reasons for this is that the rollout of the generally recognized accounting practice with GRAP is now applicable to all the municipalities. And you may recall that this is one element that was being phased in by Treasury over a period. And I think this time around, if I'm not mistaken, in last year, that was the first time that GRAP is now fully applicable to all municipalities in its fullest form. Hence, some of the municipalities have demonstrated lack of readiness to respond to some of those reporting requirements as prescribed by the General Recognized Accounting Practice. But I guess that's no reason for regression, because the fact that Treasury had made a decision to phase this in over a period of 5 to 6 years was to give municipalities an opportunity to beef up their resources to respond to this known, development that by this year, 2012, GRAP would be applicable in its full force to all the municipalities, regardless of their status. That is, even the local banking municipalities have had to contend with full might of generally recognized accounting practice. Right. But if you contrast that with what I've just said, I think the fact that the trend is shifting, has shifted slightly higher in terms of qualified reports and basically not reversed the outcomes completely, is another indication that municipalities do have the ability to respond to the requirements if they put sufficient energy and sufficient resources to it. You know? And in this respect, I'm just going to take you to a different slide, which is slide number 8. I'm just going to do this in a rather haphazard fashion, if you can just bear with me. Slide number 8, or page 8, is an indication of why what I'm saying has got some measure of merit. Because the first set of financial statements that we received indicated that only 27 municipalities, or rather 10% thereof, would have presented a decent set of financial statements that were auditable. And only after the effort at the time of the audit could we get to a point where some of the material omissions or errors were corrected and could be corrected during the time of the audit. That indicating that if the effort was put much earlier, we should have seen a much more better picture in terms of the extent of the credibility of information that municipalities are managing when it comes to financial matters of municipalities. 55% of the municipalities obviously could not get to the point where the financial statements could not be qualified, could not be modified, which is rather regrettable, because even those that could not do this, there's no reason why they can't do it if they had put sufficient effort to respond to the requirements of financial management. So for us, this kind of indication is very important to say there is an ability to get this done, and most of that ability is carried out by, if you go to page 9, to an extent by the help of consultants. Because many municipalities still don't have the skills in-house to respond to the requirements of GRAP. They still call upon consultants at the end of the reporting cycle to put together financial statements that are in compliance with GRAP. If you look at the long, I think the orange or brown or yellow line, I don't know, yeah, at the bottom, that's a big number of close to 170 municipalities that use consultants that had no good enough skills to respond to the requirements of GRAP. And consultants had to come in and help them out in this respect. But in spite of that, what was very admirable, if you look at the green section, there were nine municipalities that got clean audits this time around of unqualified reports with no findings. Of those, only 3 did that writing on the back of consultants. The other 6 did that all by themselves, which then shows that it is possible for municipalities to respond to these requirements. And I was listening to the Director General of Treasury yesterday in the session that Minister Baloyi called in Emperor's Paris, when he said, we only need a handful, even if one municipality, that can demonstrate that compliance with the requirements of the regulations and law is something that is possible, to demonstrate that the rest of the pack can also do it. And that green section there does demonstrate that very, very explicitly. And therefore, there ought not be any reason if everyone applies the model that these municipalities have applied. There's no reason why the rest could not and cannot going forward establish a structure and systems that would respond to the reporting requirements of Treasury. if I go to the extreme block, which is the red block, a large number of municipalities over 78 had disclaimers of opinion or adverse opinion. And of those, a large proportion, about 85%, had used consultants to prepare financial statements. But despite of having used consultants, they still got the disclaimer. It once again indicates the fact that it doesn't help to bring consultants when the basic records that support your report have not been put in place, because consultants are not going to help you to reconstruct what was never there or correct the damage that you've already done as part of the weak system. The same applies to the backward block, which basically supports 64 municipalities, of which, once again, around 80% of the use consultants, but still got qualified on one or two matters. But you find that in this case where there are these qualifications, I actually haven't looked at this because it's not tracking these numbers. But at the last time I checked it, the bulk of the qualified audit opinions were around infrastructure assets or assets in general or revenue. Those are the two areas that were, or debtors, those are the areas that were mainly affected by the qualified report. But in the general report, we still reinstate that analysis. But I've got no reason to believe that those sections are the ones that municipalities are struggling with the most, revenue, which is combined with data, as well as the areas around assets. On the note of the financial statements, you find that issues around commitments and what municipalities owe to other third parties, either directly or through contingencies, is another area that municipalities tend to struggle to measure and establish. Basically giving a situation where they don't necessarily know what kind of obligations, what kind of commitments, what kind of liabilities or exposure they have towards third parties. You know. So, and those are some of the principles of GRAP, which is accrual accounting, which makes municipalities to know the status of their balance sheets, to know the status of their financial positions, position to explain what the balance sheet is, as well as to know the status of the operations, which is the income statement. The yellow block is the one that really, I think every time we have this discussion, we always say we need to find a way of taking these to a point where they can sustainably move towards the green area, where they don't have to wait for the auditors. Because, I mean, 107 of them would like a large number. Three-quarters of them use consultants to arrive at the situation where they could produce financial statements. But in spite of having used consultants, some changes had to be done on those financial statements by the audit process, meaning that the consultants had to buy their minds in the first instance. They themselves could have picked up these issues if they could, if they are correctable. We can understand the situation where the situation is hopeless and it could not be corrected, but where it can be corrected, we struggle to reason with the logic that the consultants could not pick up. And therefore, one of the issues raising as part of this analysis is to give a much more greater attention to how the support structures that municipalities use to prepare their financial statements, how these support structures are optimized and brought at the time and utilized in a manner that will produce a different set of information and a different set of value for the money paid to them. And if you contrast this with the report that we had tabled on the use of consultants, this is very consistent with some of the principles that we highlighted in that report, which the DAG has had an opportunity to take this COVID through a few months ago. So part of the action plan that we've highlighted both in Cabinet and in the rest sessions that we've been having is to look at how we can optimize this resource. I mean, $360 million is quite a large sum of money to pay to this resource to government. And it's not all, by the way, because this number only includes that the municipality paid from their own coffers. It does not include consultants that were paid for on behalf of municipalities by either the provincial government or the national government. So there's a possibility that this fee, in fact, could rise even much more higher than this if we can factor that figure, but it has not been easy for us to extract that number at the time we were auditing the MFMA, because we're looking specifically at local government, not at the provincial and local government records. But the moral of the story here is that these consultants are being brought here to supplement skills that are inadequate at the level of municipalities to do the job at hand. And we're saying maybe there's nothing wrong with that, because this is a temporary workaround which has got to be used if we are to make sure that the principles and the spirit and the expectations of the MFMA and the subsequent regulations, supporting regulations, are adhered to. But there must also be a way of dealing with the reality that we face, that the skill level needs to be beefed up so that the dependency on these temporal resources is minimized. We know that there are municipalities that would probably never walk away from using consultants because of, in most instances, their proximity. But those are a minority in relation to the populace of local government. One can understand the situation, but we need to get to that point in some stage. If you look at page 10, which is slide 10, it's just an extension of why the results look the way they are. I've already spoken about the scheme situation, which has not changed much from last year. I think there's just a tiny worsening of the situation, which is neither here nor there, but bottom line is that we have not addressed the issue of skills at local government. Right, if you look at the first two bars there, the other important area that we want to highlight is the last twin bars, which are talking to the slow response by political leadership in addressing the root causes of poor audit outcomes. Here there is an interesting trend that has just spiked in terms of our observation. It's not an observation, it's our experience, because these are the people we talk to, at least every quarter. And therefore, when we make inquiries as to why the action plans are not being actioned, why the promises that were made last quarter when we here have not been honored, this is the result of the conversation. So we're seeing a growing trend of the political leadership, particularly at a local government level, not responding to these issues. Here we're making reference not only to the mayors, we're also making reference to the speakers, because every time we concluded our one-on-one sessions with municipalities, we made a specific emphasis on the role of the speakers to look specifically at the credibility of information that comes before council. But for speakers to do that, they would have to rely on a couple of players. And one of those players would be the Municipal Public Accounts Committees. One of those players will be the Audit Committees. One of the players will be the Internal Auditors. But primarily, the main player that they need to rely upon is executive and administrative leadership, who have got to put internal controls in place that are reliable enough to produce a credible information. So, within that chain of events and chain of responsibilities, the council ought to be in a position to say what comes to us in the form of either 71 or 72 reports, and what comes to us in the form of the annual reports, to what extent has it been validated and double-checked for credibility right across the chain. Finding that that role is still not being honored as expected. We understand that one of the reasons it is not being done is the fact that councillors themselves neither wider nor adequately equipped to play that role. And therefore, the obvious reaction to this, which was spoken about SALGA, so that I forgot to mention that SALGA has been part of the engagement around this issue, both at the level of the conference last year, because at the time they had the conference, we had an idea as to what the outcomes were pointing towards. And also at the time they had the National Executive Committee on fringes of the state and nation this year. We put to them how important it is to have councillors given dedicated training, councillors given continuous training, councillors being given a training that would give them some measure of accreditation to confirm that they are now equipped to carry out the role of being a councillor. Because until and such time as that is done, the situation here is proving to get worse and worse, because you're basically facing a situation where the oversight is not being exercised basically over the municipalities. Let me say the majority of the municipalities. It is exercised on a few, and we have to learn from those that have perfected the art of exercising that oversight. It also doesn't help the fact that some of the municipal public accounts committees have not been as stable as they should have been. Because some of them get trained, as you are aware, they've been trained by the APEC structure, but most of them have had to experience a lot of turnover because they get trained and they get moved around. And basically all the training goes to complete waste, because they've got to now look at training a different set of members of APEC. So I guess the bottom line there is we need to find a way of making sure that this layer of oversight is given sufficient capacity to be able to do what is expected of them. Knowing obviously that, I mean, this is a political competence that is here. It's not a business management competence. But in spite of that, there are limited basic competence that can be acquired in order to fulfill the role of oversight, even though the basic business management competency, I mean, has not been part of sitting in council. The one way of mitigating that is to have rigorous and continuous training that will have the factor of continuous professional development by this layer. I think I've emphasized it enough deliberately so, because we have in our analysis, I mean, having gone backwards and forth to figure out what is causing these outcomes to be as stagnant and the worsening as they are, this is one of the reasons they are happening like that. The mid section, obviously, talk about how do you deal with the issue of managing performance and accountability, both by the administration and as well as by the political oversight, so that when things go astray, there is a mechanism that will kick in to demand, in a structured and systematic way, some measure of accountability. And we're finding that in many instances that accountability is not as robust as it's supposed to be. So things do go astray, they keep repeating themselves, and very little happens to respond to those issues. So that's the essence basically of why the audit outcomes look the way they are. And obviously if you go to page 7, this poses a risk to issues that we've identified as most affected by these weak internal controls. The fact that supply chain management practices get continuously neglected, flouted, or deviated from. Issues relating to the recording of performance or service delivery information also gets
interject. I've been asked to borrow a colleague member for a brief situation. I wanted to check either we could allow you to conclude the initial introductory presentation that you have started, and then have a short tea break, and then resume. How many minutes do you think you still need to complete the
act? Let me have a finish check, because I'm almost at the tail end now. The areas of reporting on service delivery at local government level is also being affected by these shortcomings. The area of, we're talking about the quality of financial statements. IT controls is also affected to make sure that things that get done in those systems are things that are ethical, are things that are robust, are things that acceptable. And when linked, in fact, supply chain and IT, we're hearing horror stories about what people are doing and are able to do in the system to facilitate issues as simple as double payments on account of, for instance, dumb data of suppliers in the system. You know, and people are using the systems and computers, and if there's no controls around what gets into those computers, there's a lot that can happen to basically look at these shortcomings in a challenged way. So these bubbles should not be looked at in isolation. They are interrelated, and the one affects the other. And that's why we need to find controls that will look into those issues. I've spoken about human resources, the skills issue. And that's the one thing that we have been able to track now. You have noticed that we did highlight this during the TFMA reports, the issue of the financial health of the municipalities. We still find that at least the vast majority are still financially viable, but that analysis is questionable because we don't know how viable that figure is if some of the financial results have got its limits. To review that information, to be reported in full and properly, that would give us a better indication as to the viability of these disparities. So that's just an indicative number that could or could not change depending on the accuracy of the report. So the last issue I just want to highlight is the fact that if you look at page 5, we spoke about this at length during the TFMA, the respect for the rule of law and compliance with the prescribed regulations or legislation is one thing that we still see as being deviated from and to by many municipalities. And the number is growing slightly when it was high last year, but it can't be higher than it has been. But so compliance with laws and regulations is an issue. And for us, it's not about nitpicking. It's about significant deviations from laws and regulations. When you look at the transition, we also look at what is the impact of deviation from the laws, and this is the overall analysis of what it looks like in totality. So it's not a significant issue, it's something that needs to be addressed. And the Director General of Treasury yesterday, directed his focus and attention to this issue, that these laws, these regulations are put there for a reason. And if you begin to sneeze at them and take them as if they're not serious, the confidence of the public is going to be eroded in terms of the trust that they're giving to government, and yet demonstrate an attitude of not respecting the laws that are meant to safeguard the public funds. So it's with that context that this is important. And basically, page 6 is just an analysis of in which areas these laws and regulations deviate most. Supply chain issues, financial, fiscal discipline, are the main issues, areas where there is more deviation from these laws. For your information, obviously, page 4 is an analysis of these results by provinces, and that light is self-explanatory in terms of how the provinces have fared in terms of their performance on the audit outcomes. So, sure, that's the highlight of the results, with obvious emphasis on the issues that need urgent attention, which, as I said, we have discussed at length with the various stakeholders, Salka provinces, cabinet yesterday, and the speakers forum will also be briefed on it in the next 4 weeks or so. And I think we would have completed the cycle of the consultations. And also, having spoken to the NCOP, which is, I guess, another huge element of the speakers forum and in the provinces, because most of the speakers have been engaged on different legislative levels. They've covered the bulk of the affected parties when it comes to this, including the Premier's coordinating forums, where the municipality themselves would be invited. There are provinces where we decided not to invite the municipalities, but just stick to the top four, let's say the Premier, the MSCs for either finance or treasury, as well as the speaker and the committees that are responsible for this. The top six, sorry. Yeah. So we've been variable in our choice of who we engage for good reasons. And I think all those have sharpened the focus on the reaction and remedies to these audit outcomes. Yeah. and I guess here with me here today to just briefly escort so that in your role as well, you are able to look into the possibility of how you can support and measure the rigor with which National Assembly and the FDLP are pushing on these issues here, yeah, with the ministers and the relevant premiers and MCs. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share this with yourself.
Thank you, AG. As I indicated, I'm going to beg the indulgence of the meeting that we take a 15-minute tea break, and then we can resume and engage with the presentation. I'd also request the colleagues to forthwith move to S26 to ask if another committee in the quorum. But before I release you, I also want to, again, thank your indulgence to express a personal gratitude to you, AG, for attending the funeral of my mother on the 27th and the support that I got from your office. It's most appreciated, and it's an appreciation that's expressed not only by myself but also members of my family. Thank you very much. We will have a jet for 15 minutes and we'll resume thereafter. Thank you.
My God, I think it's 15 minutes. That's cool. Then the over maybe.
Yeah, man, we got it. Yeah.
It seems straightforward.
Straightforward.
It is very straightforward. Yeah. It's very, very, very simple.
Mm. Is this your question?
But of course, we meet this guy, the other committee, he's
Asian. Oh, okay.
But he's a Khalifa.
So I'm kind of wrong.
But if we
look at one of
them,
we look at
one of them. No, it's kind of, I'm so not.
Sure.
Yeah. So
I can
leave to the
person. Okay, this,
anytime. You don't even have one study. You go and you
go and you go. It would have been interesting to, if you said I could get there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to come up
with it. I'm
going to come up with it. No, it's that we have to
go to Monday. That's okay.
Yeah, but I would have
loved to. But you don't know, you think it's coming all over again.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's not bad at all.
Like,
you know, like, they don't need that
jargon. They do.
It's a big
one. Yeah.
I haven't heard
it. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think because I'm familiar with the whole Habibi
stuff. Okay.
But
yeah, don't. The people are nice.
Should it continue or should we leave it?
I'm not sure. Because the foreigners should go now, they put on words in the that, yeah, quite a lot of people. But there was this very interesting work.
Yeah, I know, I can tell. Yeah.
I
want
to know.
And then you see people that are sick as a...
Yeah, because you put in the chair.
Oh, okay.
But question here, you see people just sitting, you've got a plate, you can have
a... Oh, then you can put it on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you hit with everything, then I'll...
Yeah, but thank you for...
So I've gone around this.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of meetings next weekend.
Really?
So I've gone around and asked you for
your topic.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, it's limited
time. Yeah, that's
right. You're
welcome.
Okay, I'll see you.
Okay,
bye. Bye.
Sorry for the slightly more prolonged tea break. I think a brief bonding session after not met in a while was warranted. Yes, the AD's presentation highlights, and the opportunity now is for us to engage with the presentation, unless the anybody else from the Aegis office assigned wants to augment any of the on any of the elements that have been covered by the AG. Any further input, if the AG?
Thanks, Chair. No, nothing to add, Chair. We actually had the opportunity to augment the message before the AG presented, so it is adequately augmented.
So he is a representation of the collective wisdom of the institution as a whole. All right, that's appreciated. All right, colleagues, there you have it. Nice and succinct. Here's the opportunity to interact with it. Any takers? Yes,
thank you, Chair. And it's a very short and powerful question. Is there hope? So will there be changes next year or if you think there's hope, what should be done in the immediate future?
I'll take a few and block Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation also. I really just have one question. These outstanding audits, and there are 20 of them, and this was as at the 31st of March. Do we have any idea of what the progress is? In other words, are they done? And are they listed somewhere? Because obviously this is quite a big problem. Thank you.
All right. Any further questions? I just want to check the slightly related but not quite arising out of directly out of this presentation. You alluded to the linkage with the performance audit report around the use of consultants and the correlation between the findings there and some of the observations here. I just wanted to check from our parliamentary side how many committees have yet interacted with that report to your knowledge, or have you interacted with on the report, and do you know if there's any initiatives on the part of various committees that may have done so to pursue issues arising out of that report? Because I know that we still need to report on it, haven't reported on it. We haven't reported on it ourselves. But we may need to look at how do we approach some of these issues in a collective way as different committees as opposed to just acting in silo around these issues and compare notes across different common interests. But yeah, that's the one issue. The other issue I wanted to just check is that, and I suppose the issue of value for money would also emerge out of that performance audit report on the use of consultants. To say of the 800 and something million that was used for consultants in this area, are we able to reduce how much value for money has been achieved, or is it something that would require a separate performance audit similar to the one that was done? I'm trying to think in my head, are there certain situations that actually justify and warrant legitimately for the use of consultants as opposed to appointing full-time people? One, either because the municipality is too small to be able to afford or even require, in terms of its needs, a full-time person to do some of this work, and rather it would be more value for money for them to have somebody who comes once in a while, comes external from the audit team, and therefore you save hours in terms of engaging them by only engaging them when it's necessary. In other words, something akin to seasonal work, if you like. So I'm just looking at, have we done or attempted to do some kind of analysis of cost benefit. I mean, we ourselves in this environment do use outside firms precisely for similar reasons. Or is it simply purely by and large a question of you know, municipalities not being on top of the game in terms of filling vacancies and all these other issues that I identify? Maybe let me pause there on that one. And this is Honorable Chapetol and then Prof. Yes?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's a bit worrying. This report is actually worrying. When I look at three things, status of compliance with laws and regulations. You know, people are paid for doing work. And as far as I'm concerned, people have got to justify their salaries. Well, it can't be as if, you know, it's something that people do for charity. People have got to earn their salaries. That's the beginning. The other one is dummy data. To me, that is criminality. If people work out something and feed the computers, that is intentional fraud. And it should be treated as such, not as a mistake or it's not a weakness that can be, maybe people can be taken to a workshop. These people are just criminals who do that. The other one is, I think it's almost, maybe it's almost like the dummy data one, the absence of source documents. Why should there be no, I don't think there's any audit under the sun who can actually attest to what he has not seen. Even if they get a consultant, if the documents are not there, auditors are not sangomas. They've got to have the source documents. It boils down to people not keeping the records because they're not serious to their work, one, or they shred them intentionally. You know, it also goes down to the fact that it's either people are not aware that they are prescribed periods for keeping records, or people just ignore everything else and make the records disappear. As a committee, I think we should make very serious recommendations. This report is not encouraging at all. What I can see from this report is that the Auditor General was all out of their way to try and assist. But let's be honest, they cannot assist people who want to defraud the state. There's nothing you can do. Whether you take that person to workshop or not, if a person wants a document to disappear because he wants to cheat, that person will not improve because of a workshop. So let's, as a committee now, just take a stand on things like this and write and recommend to the legislature very serious steps to be taken against people who are not complying with the laws. Why do we make the laws if certain people are allowed to get away with murder?
All right. Okay. My question is a point of clarity or out of curiosity. How does the use of consultants in municipalities compare with the use of consultants in the provincial legislature? Where is it greater? Thanks.
All right. Any further questions from colleagues? All right, there you have it, LJ.
Thanks, Chair. I'm probably going to respond to one question. And give my colleagues an opportunity to also comment on this, on the rest of the consultation. The one of whether is there any hope and what should be done in response to these outcomes.
for us, the first step that we are doing, and that's why even though the results are ready, we're still consulting, we're still engaging. It's part of the process of facilitating a decisive response on these results. But by the time they go out for public attention, at least that question of whether there's hope or not can be given a chance to be answered. And the question of whether there's hope is going to depend on the extent of the quality of the plans that have been put in place to respond to these issues. First amongst all these issues, obviously, is just the discipline of submitting information on time that is credible enough to be giving a sense of respect for compliance, a sense of respect for regulations and the laws that are governing financial management in South Africa. Now, the direct answer to that question is, unless and until such time as fix the issue of skills, there will never be hope. Because that's the underlying reason. That's why I put the slide, I think it's number 10, there to get not only now to the symptoms of what we pick up at an audit scrutiny level, but to get to the point where we find out what are the underlying impediments that are giving rise to these repetitive findings. So the skills issue is very serious. But the skills issue can be resolved if we can deal with the utilization of consultants effectively. And for that one, in the meeting we had with the Minister of Finance the day before yesterday, there's been a commitment from Treasury to look into the issue of intervening in developing a standard practice on how local government is assisted to deal with consultants. One, from the point of view of the timing of when the engagement should be done, and secondly, the terms of payments, so that payments don't simply just get done, like signing a friendship, but payments are made on basis of specific deliverables. So Treasury is looking into that. So that's the only hope we have at the moment as an interim measure to respond to the fact that the skills issue may take some time to be dealt with, because for that one, we've got to deal with the issue of what you do with the 158 people that are in the system that don't have an idea of what they are employed to do. That's the area. The other area is how do we deal with the empowering the councillors to effect a proper oversight. That one, to a large extent, is dependent on the appetite of the political parties, for starters, to make it an important issue that the councillor that we put in there, even though we know a ticket to be a councillor is not business excellence or government excellence, but at least we will invest in making sure that they are adequately equipped to perform that job. So that accountability for councillors is also something that is in the agenda of political parties. I don't think it's something that can happen in the short term. It can definitely happen in the medium term. But going in the long term, it's something that is known to be a prerequisite for becoming and supporting the structure of council. And for too long, the structure has been left too loose in terms of its adequacy to perform a task, and also its the accountability that should go along with that. All I can say there is hope, because we know what should fix, but the question for what commitment is there to fix what may be fixed. And this issue of against consequence, we keep coming back to it by saying it must be consequences that are properly structured, that must be based on an adequate system of empowering people first and foremost to get the job done. I don't think it helps to to hit someone hard without having first invested in their ability to perform, whether at the level of the administration or whether at the level of the of political oversight. So I think that first layer of intervention has got to happen, the investment in the excellence and ability to do their job. And I think slide 10 and 9 are very complementary in terms of a thorough diagnosis of what should be done. And we're very, very, very comfortable and very, can I say, upbeat about the fact that if you fix those issues, you're going to, if you look at the 80-20 principle, you're going to deal with the small, it's 20% of the issues, but they're going to deal with 80% of the problem. And then you can deal with other peripheral issues that are housekeeping by nature or some that keep rearing their heads at an ugly kind of occasion. But those, if you can fix those, they're going to deal with the problem, I mean, quite substantially. You know. Yeah, I think that's the issue. Maybe I can leave it to you, Kimi, and Takane to all come in on the other reflections. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps maybe I'll come in the end with the issue on the use of consultants and cover that point broadly. If Takane could just deal with the outstanding audits and progress on them, and I think there's one or two other issues dealing with consequences that Honourable Foothold also raised, then I'll pass that to me, and I'll deal with the last part of it.
Thank you very much, DAG. Good morning, members. Many of the outstanding orders, even at this stage, sit in the Northern Cape. The late submissions in the other provinces have largely been dealt with. You note the major improvement in the Northwest in that a number of submissions have indeed come through, even though the audit outcomes are still largely adverse or disclaimer opinions, the number of submissions has indeed improved, and that's largely because of the intervention by the provincial treasury as well as the national treasury team. The province festival challenge in terms of submissions at this stage remains Northern Cape.
Just to follow up on that late submission issue, could it reasonably be deducted that one of the motivating reasons why people submit late is because they can see upfront that they're heading for a disclaimer or something close to it, and that as a result, the dilatory kind of conduct is a way of egg dancing, if you like, which is the language that some people use these days. I just wanted to check that.
Chair, it's difficult to say with certainty the motivation behind people not submitting financials for audit. But I think if you look at what's happened in the Northwest, where the National Treasury put in place a number of punitive measures to force submission by municipalities in terms of withholding conditional grants, as well as the support that came even with that punitive measure. There was support to assist municipalities in terms of compiling financials that we submitted for audit. You'll see that many of those findings, those outcomes are adverse or the same as half opinions, which indicates that there were genuine problems in terms of how the finances of those municipalities were being run. In terms of the Northern Cape, our indications at this stage are that it's similar type challenges as what we would have seen in the Northwest in prior years.
Further additions? Yeah, you wanted to come back on this.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The issue pertaining to the report on the use of consultants that we presented, we certainly interacted with the 8 portfolio committees in which those departments that we examined belong. In addition to those 8, which were transport, defense, police, water affairs, health, public service administration, rural development, and correctional services. In addition to those, we also interacted with the Portfolio Committee on Finance, as we examined this as a transversal issue, and also appropriations as well, to give them a heads up on some of the issues that we have picked up. One interaction that we had proposed to do, and we haven't taken it off the agenda, was to have a session at the level of the Chair of Chairs, so that there can be sufficient attention given to steps that need to be taken to address the issue that we highlighted in that performance audit report. So we're hoping that we can still find time, but as we look forward into the next couple of months programs, we will try hard, but we think that it will be by luck if we manage to get to that. But one of the comforting things, I think, which is a development we've noted as well, is that this area, since we presented the report, it not only get confined to interactions with the affected departments. We started seeing other committees also taking proactive steps, because we distributed and shared the report to all committee chairs directly. So even though we may not have met in a formal session, but the steps that we thought are necessary, we started taking shape in a number of those, which means that they themselves, the committees, have seen it necessary to pay close attention to the whole area of the use of consultants. In this year, Chair, clearly there are areas that are wanted in respect of the use of consultants, whether one looks at it from municipality level, or whether one looks at it from provincial or any national department. However, the point that we are emphasizing in the report, which we believe needs to be given close attention, is the mechanisms in place in those particular institutions that will enable them to monitor closely what those third-party service providers are delivering to them. Are they delivering the type of outputs that they expect and that they thought they were paying for? Because that's the only way that they can be able to say, we at least are getting the level of value that we were buying, regardless of the fact that we did not have to put a big department ourselves to do the work that can best be done by people in a short-term assignment environment. So that's the point that we believe requires that level of forthright attention when we deal with the issue of third-party service providers. It's not so much about entering into a discussion about the desirability or otherwise. It's all about, fundamentally, once you've made the decision, how do you make sure that that which you paid for delivers to you what you want? And if one look at the slides that AG presented, especially in municipalities, that 360 million that was put on the slide has spent to provide a number of financial management interventions by service providers who are outside of the municipalities, has resulted in a number of those institutions not getting any better than they were when they spent that amount of money. So that, I think, is the extent to which the effort, if I can just let on to an addition to what Asia said earlier. That's one of the key elements also that is required to at least deliver a sense of hope as to whether the situation will change. Because for as long as we accept that there are people outside of the public sector who can assist these institutions to do better, what is required is for them to be project managed properly so that they deliver what has been agreed to be delivered. Insofar as the area of split between possibly municipalities and legislators in terms of this end, we have not taken it to that level of detail. However, there's a component that we were starting to look at now, which is about the extent of internal audit services as a component of services that are bought in municipalities or in national departments. Because what you're saying is that if there's an internal audit function that is aimed at identifying these weaknesses before the end of the financial year, to what extent are they incentivized to make sure that they actually identify these things so that they are brought to the attention of the chief financial officer, the attention of the municipal manager, so that they can take an early decision to address them. Now, those are some of the issues that we're also starting to look at. However, in looking at the split, we looked at the whole of the municipality environment in terms of the MFMA, as well as the PFMA environment, and came to a number that we haven't even, it's an extraction, not an audited number, it's an extracted number, which indicates that somewhere around 1.5 billion is spent on either departments internally in the municipalities and the provincial departments, or on internal audit services, because sometimes the services are secured from external companies. So there is an opportunity to actually extract this value even from that area, to say there's nothing more that must spend. What needs to be done is to focus the effort around how do we make sure that the value that we need to extract is derived, so that we can start giving substance to the issues of value for money. Because once we start seeing a lot of these intricate internal control system weaknesses coming out of the system, we can then be able to say that these resources that we have planted and put into these institutions are starting to bear fruit and are creating an environment where audit outcomes that are sitting at unqualified findings will gradually disappear, because people would have caught on to the ability to do the accounting in terms of GRAP, but at the same time they will also be assisted by many levels of oversight to deal with findings, because if those findings persist, they tend to degenerate to the purple side, and instead of retaining the unqualified position, they end up becoming qualified because of the persistence of the findings not being given attention to, regardless of the resources that are invested to address it. So that's the area, Chair, in regard to how we've approached the use of consultants. And we are continuing to give attention to it because we think there's a lot of opportunity to extract that which is a decisive solution. It's already there. The necessary assistance has been identified, and we believe that most of the service providers are more than competent to deliver what is required. All that needs to be done is to entrench the disciplines of making sure that they are held to their roles. Thank you.
I want to make a follow-up on the issue of the capacity, especially of your smaller municipalities. I know that sometimes there's been discourses around the need to reorganize our municipal system in such a way that, you know, such municipalities that do not have the capacity, be it to generate sufficient revenue or resources to be able to fulfill these responsibilities, are collapsed into a collection of municipalities or into bigger municipalities, so that we begin to reduce the genuine problem of capacity that is most unlikely to be generated given the circumstances. And of course, linked to that is issues such as the culture of payment versus culture of non-payment or services, which is a significant revenue source for a municipality in order for the municipality to deliver. On the one hand, and I'm referring to issues which we actually picked up during our oversight visit to various municipalities. On the one hand, and on the other extreme, you know, so-called citizens associations of various forms, ratepayers associations and so on, who then withhold revenue from a municipality to say, if you are not well managed, we're not going to give you the resources, certainly not from our pockets. On the one hand, and the municipality saying, but for us to be able to work effectively, we need that revenue to organize ourselves. And then you find a deadlock situation, but in the meantime, a further degeneration of the situation. So these things seem to be so transversal and so interlinked, some political, some technical, and we just have to find a way where we can integrate and find integrated solutions to these problems, which would include both political interventions but also issues of looking at real challenges and how they can be dealt with in order to eliminate situations such as capacity. And of course, where there's outright criminality, like Honorable Tollett alluded to, indolence, criminality, and behavioral issues, those clearly need very concrete and stern interventions, and we need to be able to isolate those clearly. Now, I don't know to what extent can we use this audit outcome to build firm recommendations that can be put at least at a political platform, given the fact that we are in that space, in a very concrete way, and say, these are the real concrete interventions that we're calling for as SCOWEC. Maybe a small voice, but maybe many small voices like us saying similar things might just begin to turn the wheel around slowly. To say, can we identify very concrete proposals targeted to specific audiences that can begin to make a difference? And what am I referring to? At some point we once had a colloquium or endeavor of some sort where the different law enforcement agencies or investigative agencies and so on came under one roof, including yourselves, and we began to engage around things like exchange of information between agencies, reinforcing each other in terms of mutual collaboration with a view to at least at that level begin to tackle some of the issues that can be tackled, especially on behavioral issues. So I'm just obviously waffling a bit, but maybe it's because the situation warrants a little bit of waffling anyway. Honorable Kuranoff asked the question, is there any hope? And I would have immediately responded that as politicians, we do not have the luxury to ask that question. We should answer the question. But yeah, it's a kind of a waffle, and I'm in a sense also engaging colleagues to say, what are we saying, you know? What are we proposing? Because all that the AIDS office can do is point us to the issues and leave it up to us. So in a sense, I'm provoking a bit of a reflection on our side as well. But if you want to also react to some of my waffling, maybe I should give you the first opportunity, and hopefully colleagues will be takers as well.
Yeah, that's fine. Chairman, I think the issues are very explicit in terms of what needs to be done. They, in our view, they don't need further diagnosis of what should be done. It's a question of implementing solutions to respond to the diagnosis. Last year, the cabinet, if you recall, did the task Minister Baloyi with the explicit and specific role of responding to the first part of this site, which is the skills issue. But the focus of that on the financial management skills, CFOs in particular. And in doing so, also look at the whole area of the minimum skills requirements that are needed to fix the area. And now understanding Mr. Baloyi is like working on that. It's one of the issues that is contained in the report that is due to be released. And as part of that report, what we've learned is that it's incorporating many other issues that are responding to some of these observations. But in the session we had with him yesterday, because he's in the consultative process of making sure that whatever will come out of his reflection on the turnaround from municipality is something that will not be theoretical, but it's something that is implementable. My suggestion is that there must be an engagement with either him or his team so that all that effort and all that energy and all those thoughts are confirmed to be incorporated in that central point, because it certainly is conscious of the fact that there must be a convincing response to the situation. There must be a convincing response once again to when fiscal discipline, governance, and issues of stability of local government will begin to be to emerge and be sustainable. I'm sure the report will be tabled in Parliament. Maybe the first area of
reference to that would be when he's delivering his budget, which I don't know when that's coming, maybe sometime next week. But we do have a focal point and a clear commitment as to where that responsibility lies. And my suggestion is that it ought to be channeled towards that rather than it be something that is reflected in different voices that are coherent. I think the point of convergence has been clearly defined by the cabinet, and we need to utilize that resource to then direct our anxieties, our inputs, and our contributions, so that the outcome of that report is something that will bring about the hope that the Honorable Koronoff was talking about.
So this report is going to be is initiated and will be tabled by Minister Baloyi in COGDA. All right. Now I'm asking this because obviously as COEC, we will produce our own report to the House with our strong observations, including those that colleagues have made, with some recommendation. But over and above that, politically, as I'm thinking, we organized in a cluster form, and we belong to the governance and monitoring cluster here in Parliament, where both the COGTA committee, public service committee, and a few others that are pertinent here actually sit. So what we could do is to table a political submission at that level, because the ministers and deputy ministers also sit, which is a study group format in that cluster, and that would include Minister Baloyi and others. Probably even that report would also come to that forum as well. But I think if we as COEC politically were able to engage there as well, we would just be firming up our own engagement in trying to, you know, really give a bit of a push from our side as well. I just thought I should mention it whilst it's still on my mind. But were you still responding to another issue?
I'm covered, Chair. All I was saying is that Mr. Baloyi is consulting on this issue and is more than willing, in my understanding of his intentions, to engage anyone that can add to the credibility and meaningfulness of that report to respond to this and many other issues that are backing local government.
So like I said, at the end of this, we will have to come up with a solid report, SCOEC, including in a study group format where we can engage with our political colleagues in the broader cluster. So yeah. All right. Is that basically the set of follow-ups and responses that we have? I don't know if colleagues want to add anything. We're approaching 11 o'clock, and I'd love to, as a way of incentivizing you to continue to attend Friday meetings, to adjourn at 11 to enable our colleagues to, in any case, unless there are any further inputs. All right. Okay. So unless there are any final remarks from your side, AG, I think the way forward is fairly straightforward. We'll engage, we'll ask our research unit to extract in consultation with your office salient, punchy messages that we can elevate in our report to the House, as well as the other avenues that we've alluded to. Just to add our bit. By the way, all of this also aimed at promoting the course, which you can lose hope on as well, of campaign Clean Audit 2014. Does it still exist as a campaign? COGTA is still driving it, I suppose. We've committed ourselves to support it up as well, and we mention it in our reports on the oversight visit. So we assume that all of this is also still aimed at pursuing that elusive or illicit gold. All right. Yes, yes, AJ.
Maybe the final comment on outside trade that the report will be is still in the process of being formulated as a general report. This is just an early I call it a starter or a teaser in what will be going into the general report, which mid-July, yes, yeah. And naturally, once that report has been tabled and also made public to the public, there are other opportunities to facilitate the implementation of the recommendations that may be coming out of that report. And for that, there are a number of opportunities that even us in the office have not as yet exploited in terms of how this report becomes a live record that will respond to some of the issues that you've cited. But then at least we'll be having a set of slides like the 10 slides. We'll be having a full report that will be a lot more comprehensive and explicit about things that are hidden behind this slide. So the question of how is it kept alive is something that is actioned, is something that is still an opportunity to look into. On our side, the way we keep alive is by engaging the municipalities individually, every corner, to make sure that what they promise to do, and the provinces what they promise to do, and national departments what they promise to do, is still on track. That's how we do it on our side. In terms of how Parliament do it, we've suggested, in fact, in the NCOP, that one of the issues that we've not optimized is to be available on a quarterly basis, to be given a helicopter view of what's happening in each and every province around these reports. And NCOP, in our last engagement with them, has recommitted to look into that offer. Many other committees of the oversight, like APEC, who also have a collective view on reports of this nature, including PFMA. So that's how we keep the report alive on our side. But obviously, all that is happening away from the care of the public is something to do with those that are directly charged with responding to these issues, including ministers and premiers, etc., etc. So there's no dull moment on our side in terms of keeping this alive.
Now, that is not appreciated. I think that obviously it means we cannot report officially yet on it until the general report in final form has been formally tabled, but certainly a whole lot of formal or informal engagements can ensue based on what can be extracted from this presentation. Colleagues, unless there are any other strong requests for further input, I want to wrap it at this point and thank the AG in his usual very efficient style of being able to collapse a huge body of work into very neat and easily absorbable highlights. It's most appreciated. For today, I think I'll leave matters at that. And thank you with your team for making yourself available. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Oh, so we're going to deal with some housekeeping matters. I'm just concerned that because of a bit of the challenge that I alluded to earlier, we are not adequately constituted in that some members are not here, and maybe it's a result of the confused messages or conflicting messages. So I propose that the other issues like housekeeping, like minutes and so on, stand over for the next meeting. We will communicate in due course firmly when the next meeting actually will take place. For now, it's scheduled for, is it next week, Friday? Do you want to comment? Oh, AG, you want to say something?
Chair, just a quick one on item 4 of the agenda. I know you did the comment on this item in opening remarks, but I also just want to underscore the urgency that this item needs to be treated with, because we are really running out of time and options now. In my view, if we miss September deadline that is suggested to the Speaker, we're really, really jeopardizing the process of succession in this institution. And we're going to create an environment within the institution of being a leaderless institution when I depart in November. So I just want to really make a humble plea for this thing to be given. Even if the committee makes a means to establish a body that will pursue this thing, because it's not going to be a quick process. We're still going to advertise, we're still going to receive nominations, we're still going to conduct interviews, and the list is quite long. And Parliament is going to rise at some stage, so there are constant breaks in between that are going to destabilize the continuity of this process. So I'm anxious, I'm nervous about it.
Well, I can indicate that informally, as the study group, we have made our own recommendations to the Speaker's office at an invitation. And possibly we might be looking at reconstituting ourselves into an ad hoc. And we made specific recommendations in that regard. But obviously the call is with the Speaker's office to then formally table motion in the House of Posts for the formal referral of the task, whether to us still or to such an ad hoc if that becomes the position. But my understanding is that it's being treated with the urgency that it deserves. I've had specific interactions with officials in the Speaker's office in this regard. So hopefully within the next few days, something concrete will be tabled so that we can kickstart the process. Sorry.
Chair, I just wanted to suggest that after the AG has left, the committee remains maybe for a few minutes.
All right, we have the request, and I suppose we have come to the end of the committee. Full committee or just the ANC study group? The committee. All right. Okay. AG, thank you. I'm told that our committee is now ready for us in reality. But let's just deal with Macron's issue.
Thank you.
hands up to remember, na. They just have to pay the duty.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You guys are doing the biggest service.